Welcome in, everybody, inside the Gamecocks, the show. We are live from the mountains to the sea in the great state of South Carolina, coast to coast, nationwide, and worldwide via the Chief Sports Network app. I am Phil Mad Dog Mullinax, cutting through the orange fog of the upstate of South Carolina. And as always, my co-host, J.C. Sherbert. Welcome in, J.C.
What's going on, my friend? We don't have very long.
No, this will be
a quick trip to the chat box today. I want to tell everybody, if you're in Columbia, I guess we'll get off around 1 o'clock. That's not quite time for happy hour. Yeah, but happy hour will be hour somewhere. Us. Go over there to it's like that commercial that Coleman Liquidator. Yeah. Come on out to Coleman Liquidator and get yourself a home. I don't care. Go on out to Henry's on Divine and buy the Sandstorm Mule drink with the garnet and black vodka in it. If you drink liquor. I don't drink liquor, so I would not be drinking it, but I'd have myself a beer while my wife did. And 25% of that goes in the NIL fund through Garnet Trust.
Hey.
So saw that this morning. Wanted to pass it along to everybody out there that, you know, those of you that like to go to happy hour, I've learned happy hour up north is a lot more popular than in the South. And I was trying to figure out why, because there certainly isn't more drinkers. You know, I mean, there's probably more in Chicago, but and Wisconsin, if you look at the statistics, they have beer and cheese for breakfast.
I mean, right. Yeah, I think that's
Wisconsin's way higher than everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
but I started thinking about it. I think it's because the weather down south, like, so if you're going to have a beer after work, sometimes it's just more nice to sit on your porch and do it, or you're getting off the golf course and heading the 19th hole, right?
Right.
And doing that. Up here, it's cold most of the time, so it's like, yeah, I got to go to the bar now. Yeah, their furnace is working.
That's right.
So, anyway, go on out to Henry's on Divine, get yourself a Sandstorm Mule, and put a little money in the NIL coffers and have yourself a good time. Please drink responsibly, by the way.
That's right.
Please drink responsibly. So, Lauren has a good point about the amount of offensive coordinators Carolina's been through. Yeah. So,
yeah, it's a bit excessive at this point. Hopefully, we've settled on one.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, like I said, the good thing for me is that I don't have to explain why it could be a good hire. I mean, I think too, like Bruin says, if he'd have hired Kendall Bryce instead of Dowell Loggins, I think one day Shane Beamer may say I should have hired Kendall Bryce instead of Dowell Loggins. he may think that now after working with Kendall. Dowell, though, I'll continue to say was not a bad hire.
No.
And because the big problem with Satterfield and Shula both was how he's trying to square peg into round hole personnel wise. The style of offense they wanted to play does not work in college with the no tempo and things like that. Personnel usage was an issue. And then the way the kids had to learn it was the most important thing. If you notice during the Loggins era, yeah, sometimes he got conservative, and that I didn't like that. Sometimes he should have gone for the juggler. And, you know, I don't know that if maybe some of the concepts were a little simpler in terms of the concepts, not necessarily like the reads you have to make when you're throwing it. Maybe Lenoris wouldn't have gotten off to a little bit better start in 2023, but the one thing you didn't have with him that you had with the other two was just, it was a cluster poop, like penalties, not the quarterback necessarily, nobody knowing what to do.
Right.
And then it caused the inconsistencies, weird game planning. I mean, there were a lot more issues the other two had than Dowell. If Dowell would have come back last year, I think last year's team probably wins 7 or 8 games. I think they were good enough with the right schedule. Like if they'd had A&M schedule last year with the right play caller, yeah, or maybe who else had a terrible schedule? Just name the team that lucked out in the SEC. They may make the playoff, but they wouldn't have been very good, though. I mean, it'd have been like, well, they're a function of schedule. But I think against that schedule last year, 7-8 wins with a better plan of offense was about what they were looking at.
Yeah.
You know, this year, and again, you never know, because we were sitting around last year saying how hard A&M schedule was, and it wasn't. So this may be the hardest. Everybody, Mississippi State may have the best team since Dak Prescott. Tennessee may be a national championship contender. Faison Brandon may be like a phenom. Alabama may be like Alabama has been. Keylon Russell may be great. Florida may be the hardest team to beat in the country because of their defense and run game. You know, Oklahoma will still be good. And all that, that could happen. That could happen. I mean, I'm not ruling that out.
No.
However, I'll take my chances with this group. It the only thing that would be better, Phil, I was thinking about this today, is if somehow, if I could go back in time, because I talked about Back to the Future earlier, besides stealing the sports almanac like Biff did, so I could get rich, I would go and sit down with whoever the AD at South Carolina at the time when they got in the SEC and the AD at Vandy about, listen, guys, maybe the AD at Vandy would have listened to me. But who, I was like, what you need to do is you need to create a false rivalry with Vanderbilt. Find some, make up a story, right, or find some obscure thing like the Bonham Trophy with A&M.
Yeah, that's right. You need some sort of connection that nobody's really seen yet. Yeah,
because I'll be like, listen, if you way up the road in the future, the SEC is going to expand to 16 teams, and Texas and Oklahoma are coming in. Oh my God! And that's after Missouri and A&M come in. They're like, oh, okay, well, those teams, and they're going to go to 9 games. Oh my God. What you want to do is press your interest that the Vanderbilt South Carolina historical rivalry needs to stay. And it sounds funny because they beat the crap out of Carolina last year, right?
Yeah.
But South Carolina is 30-5 against them.
Right.
And I think we can all agree that no matter how weird he is off the field and how much of a mouth the guy has, little man syndrome there, the Diego Pavia is a difference maker, and Eli Stowers was a difference maker. I mean, they had good, and the kill zone is a difference maker,
mm-hmm,
for them. So the only thing that would make this schedule set up to me a little better is because you have to go to the swamp. Just take Florida off. Which they wouldn't. Florida's a permanent opponent now. But, yeah, the permanent opponent. And put Vanderbilt on it. Your permanent opponents are Georgia, Vanderbilt, Kentucky. And this year you have what you used to have. You guys realize South Carolina, when they started out in the Southeastern Conference, way early 90s, every single season from 92 to 02, South Carolina played Kentucky, Vanderbilt, Mississippi State, and Arkansas.
Yep.
That was half the SEC schedule. Now, they also played Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, and whatever team they couldn't beat from the West.
Random Western team rolled in.
That always seemed to win the game. But in the years where you had, like, you know, Ole Miss, you know, that rotated on.
Mm-hmm.
Nowadays, in modern times, it's not Ole Miss. That would be difficult. But Auburn being on last year, the Hugh Freeze Auburn, or the Brian Harsin Auburn, would have been awesome. But, you know, that's – if you handed South Carolina that right now, that would be awesome.
Oh, so good.
And it's no disrespect. All four of those teams could beat South Carolina this year because the SEC is that close. You know, that competitive. You don't have at least your B game some nights, and you may be on. I mean, look. All right, so the best roster in the league last year was probably Texas. If you're just talking about roster, how much talent did they have? Texas. The worst roster in the league, how much talent they have, was probably Kentucky. Recruiting had kind of fallen off. They were starting the freshman quarterback that I think has a chance. He went to Arizona State. Which is lucky for him. That's a gold mine out there in a lot of ways. Arizona State. But that game was an overtime game that Kentucky should have won. Texas won 16-13 in Lexington. So that kind of shows you that you better get your poop together and play each and every of all of these nine games pretty good. But there's sometimes, like when you play well, and maybe get a lead at half or something, like Carolina did against A&M, or like they did against Alabama. If the other team's a little less talented, your chances of holding on to that lead are good, because you're not, you know, you don't have a KC Concepcion running past your secondary, or a Ty Simpson making outstanding clutch passes, you know, against you. So you always want to play the easiest conference teams you can, you know. And some teams are very talented, like Florida last year beat Texas.
Yeah.
But they had just given up by the time you know, everybody else rolled on the schedule. Well.
Beat Texas and then, you know.
Texas, but that's
lost to Kentucky to open November or in the second week of November.
Florida, dude, Auburn and Florida. I was talking about their roster. Auburn and Florida both lost to Kentucky. Yep. Florida got blown out. Auburn scored 3 points at home against a defense I was griping about. The Carolina only scored so many and
right.
used to throw the ball. Auburn scored three. There was, I think I mentioned this. There was a funny meme on Instagram that, because I guess Auburn hosted one of the pre-soccer qualifier things for the World Cup or what.
They did. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And somebody puts a picture of there. It's like, I wonder if these people know that, you know, Auburn lost to Kentucky on this field and only scored 3 points. War Eagle. Bruin mentions hiring Browse and Schnall boosted Carolina from 1.5 to 2.75. Those are good hires on paper. TD Noll asks, does a 9-3 SEC team make the playoff this year? If they'd have gone to 16, but 12 sucks. 12 sucks. Now, they did fix the rule that enables a stupid group of five to make it, but then they instituted a rule where Notre Dame gets an auto bid if they're ranked a certain amount. They still have the buy. Oh, no, they don't have the auto buys for conference, but you still have the buys that, you know, so.
Buys, but for the top four teams, which still, that's, we're still looking at a 1-7 record in the 2 12-year samples, yeah. 2 12-game samples.
I think you got to still get the 10-2. And there's 10-2s that got left out last year.
Yeah.
Like Texas, let's say South Carolina had Texas was 9-3, but
no, they were 9. Okay.
Yeah, but they won 10 after the bowl because they lost to Ohio State.
That's right.
Ohio State, Florida. And it's that Florida loss, that the bad loss to Florida, took them out. Ohio State, Florida, and Georgia. Georgia beat them by 25. And look, I think big picture. Yeah, Vandy was 10-2 and got left out.
Yeah, that's right. I think
big picture, you know, you look at the Texas situation and you're like, well, they got punished for scheduling Ohio State because some, you know, Oklahoma got in. Texas beat them by 17 points. And they played Michigan at home. And I know Ward Manuel's shadow probably still lingers over, you know, he was bragging about Indiana. Not the good Indiana, the previous Indiana. Well, they beat Michigan at home. Michigan went 6-something, or they went 7-5.
Mm-hmm.
And because they upset Ohio State, and Indiana beat them by 5 points at home that year. It's a brand, you know, and they had a freshman quarterback going into Norman. And Oklahoma didn't kill them. They just beat them. And so, you know, but you look at what Oklahoma did do. Oklahoma won on the road at Alabama late. You know, Oklahoma had some other big wins. Oklahoma had the 10-2. And so that made a difference, right?
Yeah.
And so that was the difference, you know, whereas Texas had a bad loss. Yeah, I think Oklahoma lost to who? Texas, and they lost to Ole Miss.
Texas and Ole Miss, yep.
Yeah, so no shame in that. And Texas had the bad loss to Florida. And then they got the floor wiped with them by Georgia, the conference champs. And, yes, they beat A&M. And, yes, they were playing good ball at the end, but struggling against Mississippi State and Kentucky like they did. Vanderbilt came back on them, almost beat them. I mean, I don't know. You know, I see the point about scheduling, but I also see the point about, you know, their resume, besides the head-to-head, didn't really stack up. But I'll go back to this. 2024, when it was all about the head-to-head, and this year where they screwed Notre Dame and put Miami in because of the head-to-head. When you have one team that schedules, you know, not as tough, and another team that does, you probably should just look at, you know, cancel those games out. You know, okay, you beat Michigan, they're average, and you beat them at home. You know, Texas had to go to Ohio State in an opener with a first-time starter quarterback. Ohio State was clearly a playoff team, ranked number one in the country most of the year. You lost by 7 points. Okay, one of these things is not like the other. But then what you do is you cancel that out. You get the focus off the freaking loss column, like they do, and then you act like both are like what, 9-2. Okay, you know, because you're doing a binary choice, and then you make the decision. And I mean, it was like South Carolina against, you know, when you compared the resumes with Tennessee. Okay, well, yes, Tennessee beat Alabama. South Carolina did not, right? Tennessee, I don't remember who their losses were to, Phil, in 2024.
Tennessee.
They lost to Georgia pretty bad.
I don't remember.
And they beat Alabama. They did not play Ole Miss. I don't know. Let me look it up real quick.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to pull it up to.
And they got off to a great start. So, well, South Carolina played Clemson, the ACC champ. And they lost to Arkansas. Yeah. All right. So here we go. So Tennessee's 10-2. You know, South Carolina's 9-3, right? And this is why this should have come into play. Out of conference, Tennessee played NC State way at the beginning. They beat the crap out of them, but NC State was god awful, right? Other than that, South Carolina had wins over A&M. South Carolina beat Vanderbilt worse at Vanderbilt's place. Larger margin of victory. Tennessee did not have to play Missouri. Tennessee did not have to play Ole Miss. Tennessee did not have to play LSU. They avoided all of the good teams in the league. They got Kentucky, Mississippi State. Some real garbage. You know, about their only good win was, against Alabama. They played UTEP in the non-conference. I mean, it just wasn't pretty. And then you had the bad loss at Arkansas that was just kind of okay. So, so at that point, what you do is you look at it and go, okay, one of these things is not like the other. One of South Carolina's cancels out. And then you just compare the resumes that way. And I would say that not just for South Carolina's purposes, but for anybody trying to kind of get past the whole caveman thinking of three loss better than two loss. So,
yeah. Well, and that remains to be seen. That's probably going to be. Yeah. That's probably a permanent fixture in the selection process, regardless of how many teams are allowed in.
Carolina 9-3 and Notre Dame 9-3. Does that rule knock us out if it comes down to it? It's how they're ranked.
Yeah.
Like Notre Dame's in the top 12 and South Carolina isn't, then yes, they knock them out. And what would happen is, and Harrison says Notre Dame goes 9-3 this year. They're not, their schedules. You want to talk about donkey? Yeehaw, dude.
Yeah.
When you play five, so every year they play five, and I'm not a Notre Dame hater, obviously. I wouldn't have a wife.
Right.
But Notre Dame football was built on playing the toughest schedules anytime, anywhere. Well, I think they're having a hard time getting people to play them, number one, with all the conference expansion. But number two, dude, when you consciously schedule five ACC games, as bad as that conference is, plus a service academy, sometimes two service academies, plus you play a MAC, Plus, Purdue seems to be the only team.
Yeah, I mean, you get Purdue and Michigan State in the Big Ten, right?
Yeah, they're back to playing Michigan State, which is an old school rivalry, but they're rebuilding. I mean, there's just not much there. Mm-hmm. I mean, you got Clemson when they're good that rotates on the ACC part of it. You got freaking did they play Clemson this year?
Next year, I think.
Next year?
Yeah, it's not this year, I know.
I mean, I'm going to pull up the Notre Dame football schedule.
Yeah, because their ACC smattering this year is North Carolina, Stanford.
They love playing Stanford.
Yeah, Miami, Stanford Boston College, SMU, and Syracuse. So that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yep, 6 ACC teams this year.
So, I mean, all right. So here's how Notre Dame's schedule lines up. They have a pretty cool opener. Sunday, Labor Day Sunday, they play Wisconsin at Lambeau in Green Bay. But Luke Fickell has just – see, folks, don't get caught up in hiring names.
Right.
I will remind everybody how hot of coaching commodities Luke Fickell and Billy Napier were just a short time ago. And look, I'm not saying – I didn't say they were good hires. I don't think Luke Fickell was a good fit at Wisconsin. But he has screwed it up. I mean, they're going to be – terrible again. So then Notre Dame comes back and plays the mighty Rice Owls, and I bet some snobbish professor recommended that because Rice is such a great academic school. That's why they play Stanford every year. You
know? Right. Yeah.
Michigan State comes to South Bend, so there's no road game. So here's the first two road tests. These are, if it were basketball, it'd be brutal.
Yeah, this would be a tough basketball schedule.
At Purdue and at North Carolina, back to back. So Bill Belichick, Bill B gets to play Notre Dame at home. Stanford comes to town the next week. Boy, that's tough. This one's tricky. Now
this might be the toughest game considering, the location at BYU.
But then they get an off week after playing all those 24-year-olds and in the thin air. And they play Navy in Foxborough, Massachusetts. So another neutral site game. So how many – so when your road game – BYU is tough, but when your other two road games are into Chapel Hill and West Lafayette, that's no good. Nope. Then they end it. They end it with, like, Miami, Catholics versus Convicts. That's already slated for a 7:30 p.m. kickoff on NBC. Mm-hmm. That'll be a huge game in November. Miami coming up there in November is not going to be peachy. Then their annual rivalry battle with Boston College.
That's right.
And then SMU, which last time we saw them at a Midwestern or cold weather power, they were getting slaughtered by Penn State after getting an undeserved playoff berth. And then, the last one at Syracuse, that can get tricky playing over there. But, man, I mean, if Notre Dame – there's not even a game on the schedule until Miami, and you never know with Miami. Miami may be 6-4 by the time they play
them. Right? Yeah,
Miami may just fall off the face of the earth.
Yeah,
but there's not a game until then that you even you're like, oh, well, that you go Notre Dame shouldn't win. I mean, Miami's schedule, they have the Friday night kickoff at Stanford, which is
tough. Was just sitting here looking at it. I was like, man, they play like potentially two good teams.
Yeah.
And it all depends on whether or not Florida State is actually going to be good this year or just look good on paper.
They also go to North Carolina. Right. They go to Clemson October 3rd. And then Notre Dame. So they actually Virginia Tech is going to be improved, but they have to come down there. And I mean they're Miami after they go to Notre Dame, Duke. I know Duke's kids and the former Miami head coach Manny Diaz are going to be fired up to play that one, but
that's right.
Unfortunately, so Duke, Virginia Tech, Boston College at the end. After back-to-back trips to Chapel Hill and South Bend, Florida State comes to Miami. Yeah, a game at Clemson's their toughest road game outside of Notre Dame. So Miami could be back in the playoff, and they'll get the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, of course. I mean, that goes without saying.
So. Cockweed says, only people hankering for the Southern Cal Notre Dame game are National College football writers. That game gets no play the weekend it happens. That's true, but I would have liked to have seen it.
At least it's a power opponent.
I know.
You know, at least it's another power opponent.
But you know, Miami, my you know, and it wasn't Notre Dame that canceled it. It was Miami,
no, yeah,
USC. And I don't understand USC's schedule this year. We'll talk about that and then we'll wrap it up. So, oh my God, Lincoln Riley said, "No wonder." You know, Lincoln Riley. It's kind of funny. As soon as Oklahoma was going to the SEC, he was like, "I'm leaving."
Bye.
And then he's the one that wanted to get out of the Notre Dame thing. And so I think he, I don't know, man. So here's how this lines up. And it's not as easy as you'd think, but the beginning certainly is.
So
they play a week zero game against San Jose State at the Coliseum. Then the following Friday, they welcome Fresno State to the Coliseum. Then the next Saturday, 11 p.m. Eastern kickoff, the Louisiana Raging Cajuns come to the Coliseum. The next week, and this is going to be, dude.
This is where things escalate.
It escalates. This is what's so sad about the new TV deals, too, which I'm beginning to hate because they're forcing some decisions that are ridiculous, but that's another conversation.
Right.
So you know how awesome and grandiose the SEC on CBS intro was with the da 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 da. So on Saturday, September 19th, they're kicking this off from SHI Stadium, which also sounds like a dirty word.
Right.
In Piscataway, New Jersey. As the Trojans roll into play Rutgers
in a classic matchup. Well,
I'll tell you why CBS did it, though. Think of the television markets involved.
Oh, I mean, you got LA and New York. This is everything you want the Big Ten to be.
So the next two games, they get a little tougher because they're playing West Coast. So Oregon comes in and Washington comes in, but they both come to the Coliseum. October 10th, they travel. And this is where it gets a little dicey because it starts to get a little cool in Pennsylvania and Wisconsin during this time. I don't know, October 12th. So it's Penn State, but then they get a week off before having to travel to Wisconsin. Then Halloween, Ohio State comes to town. Now it gets a little serious here. They get another week off after Ohio State, though.
We get another break
before they roll to Bloomington, Indiana to play the Hoosiers, which I'm not going to say anything about them taking a step back because I've just learned, even if Indiana's coming to that game with two or three losses and Southern Cal maybe got on a roll, beat Oregon, is undefeated, Indiana could cut them. And it is going to start to get cold at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Maryland comes to Southern. I don't know why Maryland's even in the Big Ten anymore. And then they travel to the Rose Bowl to play the new coach at UCLA. So that's right. It's pretty. There's more name teams on it than Notre Dame, but the way it flows is pretty good.
It's gonna be so crazy, but it is what it is.
All right, let's get out of here, Phil. So get on out to Henry's.
That's all right.
At Henry's on Divine, get yourself a Sandstorm meal. I'm promoting that today. Don't forget, Nike will be here in less than a week. GameCockTraditions.com, GameCock Traditions. Please support all of our sponsors. Tomorrow's it. Steve Fink is on with us.
That's going
to
be great.
That's a great way to end this season of Inside the Gamecocks.
It truly is.
What is it next? Season 5?
Fine. Officially, yeah.
Officially season 5 of ITG, the show, the morning show. Starting up the week of SEC Media Days. So we're going to be fired up to take a break. Got a lot of good things we're working on for this football season. I know I need a break from talking. But stay tuned to the ITG YouTube channel because you're going to still hear us talk.
That's right. We will still be on in some way, shape, or form.
So check us out. Don't forget the bigspur.com, GamecockCentral.com. I should have mentioned this. I mentioned it during the morning show. I did a projected depth chart today. But for the low price of $1, you can read that, some notes, some thoughts. Give your thoughts. Many of you have joined, and we appreciate that. And keep it coming. It's like Independence Day, Randy Quaid, when they're giving him coffee because he's hammered.
That's right.
Yeah. But he was a fighter pilot in Vietnam, so he's about to go fly, what is it, an F-16, F-14, to fight an alien spacecraft?
Yeah.
F-16. And they're bringing him coffee, and he's like, keep it coming. Just keep it coming to thebigspur.com and Gamecock Central 1-3. Lots of baseball scoop, too, if you care about the baseball recruiting.
So yeah.
JB's been all over that. For Phil Molinax, the Mad Dog, JC Sherbert, we'll talk to you tomorrow. And then that's it, folks, until season 5. I love all of y'all every day that come in and interact with us. And certainly, the show wouldn't be possible without all of you. So, big thank you from all of us. We'll holler at you soon. Drink or two.